It's time for your Sunrise Guys.
Let me come in.
Oh, come on in, Swag. Water's warm in here, buddy.
Come on in.
Dirt and Sprague.
I'm going to configure your widget.
I'm all alone over here. I feel like I'm in the corner watching right now.
It's breakfast time.
Swag's going to go configure Dirt's widget. Oh, my Lord.
Dirt and Sprague.
He configured both our widgets.
Oh, buddy.
On the Fan Sports Network.
Hey, welcome back in. Hour number two. Good morning. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope your weekend was great. It is college football kickoff week for most normal programs out there. Week zero is a weird week.
Can't wait, baby. Saturday's going to be a blast.
It's going to be great, man. We're going to dive fully into some Oregon stuff coming up an hour from right now as they kick off their season against Boise State. Many believe Boise State is the best group of six team.
Yeah.
And we'll see if that is the case. They are 27-point underdogs against the Oregon Ducks.
Did not look like they had a lot of competition from week zero, at least. Now, maybe Memphis is that, but UNLV was one of the trendy picks. Hawaii got a lot of attention, and
Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague is going to open up. We have a lot of audio to get to today. We'll continue on with the Dirty Poll coming up at the bottom of the hour. Good morning. Welcome to Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague. And the special today is an homage to a restaurant in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, called Stranded.
I like that name.
It was delicious, Norwegian-based restaurant. And so I was in the mood, and I was having a real craving. When you get to the end, you start thinking about, what's my end-of-this-run meal?
How fat can I get on this meal? Let's go all out, baby.
Fat ass this week, I'll tell you that much. I wanted hash browns, crispy hash browns, really bad. We went to the restaurant. They didn't have hash browns. The Norwegians
place
don't
with
do
no
hash browns.
Yeah.
That's what I found out.
Sounds about right.
Country potatoes.
Okay. Not quite the same, but
I'm a hit and miss with country potatoes. Like, I'll eat it ultimately because it's a fried potato, but, like, it doesn't hit the way hash browns is.
You got to season it right if you're doing the country potatoes.
They small cube them, which is delightful.
That's better.
Oh,
yeah.
There you
go. It's crispy. It was in butter. Served that with two over easy eggs. And cubed, perfectly cooked, probably the best I've ever had pastrami.
Really?
I mean, it was outstanding. Now, was I starving and sleep deprived?
No matter what you ate, would it tasted fantastic? Probably.
Yes. But it really was delicious. Yeah. It went way over my expectations. So I'm going to have that special be in Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague.
That's a nice positive spin when you go into a place hoping to get something and they don't have it. And you're this like immediate like, oh, damn it. And then it ends up being a good meal anyways.
And we weren't going to get out of line. So
no,
I'm like,
at that point you're here. You just got
to
find something else on the menu to eat, man.
Exactly. So let's open up Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague, and we'll start with this.
Right, we got off the course. I went in there. These guys are trying to get me to do media and all this stuff. And I was like, well, how much time do I really have? They're like, well, you got a couple minutes. And I was like, all right, let me just go inside so I can get some air conditioning. And then there was an open bar right there. And I was like, all right, I'm grabbing a beer. It tasted great. Yeah, it's fun. I don't really drink very often. Even my wife and my manager were like, wow, I haven't seen you have a beer in a long time. And it's like, yeah, well, season's over now. I'm going to have a beer. Well-earned beer. I mean, I don't know if it changes my outlook as much as it'll change y'all's. You know, I felt like my thought process going into the postseason this year was I felt like, you know, maybe I've underperformed in some of the postseasons in the past. You know, I think of, you know, years like 22 and 23 where I had, you know, a lead at this tournament, wasn't able to win the FedEx Cup or a playoff event those years. You know, to come in this year, maybe, you know, not winning the tournaments that I could have won throughout the regular season, to come in and win two out of three playoff events is definitely, you know, a nice way to finish off the season. Like I said, that was kind of my motto going into the playoffs was, you know, maybe in years I've underperformed in the postseason, and maybe this is the year where I'll perform better in the postseason than I have in the regular season.
That is Scottie Scheffler, who won the FedEx Cup for the PGA Tour, and a mind-blowing stat hit me yesterday reading about this. He has now made more money on the PGA Tour than Tiger Woods ever did.
Thanks to Tiger Woods. Make a lot more money now than PGA Tour earnings. Yeah.
You know, it's a weird thing. You guys are real big golf bros. I like the majors. I tune into some of the non-major events.
Yeah.
It's just such an odd sport in the we elevate these four tournaments specifically higher than all the others, but we're going to create a playoff system and we're going to give the biggest bag of money at the very end, but I don't know how much it changes how people view your overall season, to his point there of like, it's maybe a bigger deal to you guys than me.
Who won it last year?
Tommy Fleetwood.
Hey, look at you.
I only know that because he never won a major, but yeah, he nearly that was won his, the FedEx.
He had never won a tournament before, and then he won the FedEx Cup at the end of the year.
Yeah,
which
so
is
like,
hilarious.
How are you guys viewing the end of golf season? Are they doing a better job to you guys of making this mean something?
No.
No.
Okay.
What they're proposing to do in 2028, I'm far more intrigued and interested by to see if it works.
Yeah, the conversation for me out of this isn't necessarily how big of a deal is it that Scotty won. It's more of just a conversation around Scotty. The FedEx Cup is whatever. The majors will always matter the most. The Players' Championship will matter more than that. And you can argue a good chunk of tournaments on the regular slate people are more invested in. It's the end of the season. Football is about to begin, and a lot of people's minds have kind of moved on. Mm-hmm. The story that's interesting to me now, this was Scottie Scheffler's down year. He wasn't as good this year, right? We asked the question a couple times. Has he lost a step, maybe? In 20 starts, he had 17 top 20 finishes, 13 top 5 finishes, and 10 top 3 finishes, along with 3 wins. That's a quote-unquote down year for Scottie Scheffler.
What was the closest finish in a major he had?
That is a great question. I know he had a good showing in a couple of them, but I don't remember off the top of my head. So let me pull that up. And it's another reminder of...
That's how I'm viewing him. I know you're giving me great stats, and he's still a great golfer.
Let me see his major.
But his stranglehold on the sport that he had, that little run there, it doesn't feel quite like that's the deal. I'm not saying he's not going to win again. I'm just merely
saying. Here are his major finishes this year. You ready?
Yeah.
Finished second at the Masters, tied for 14th at the PGA Championship, tied for fourth at the U.S. Open, tied for fourth at the Open Championship. He was top four in three of the four majors this year.
What was his stroke difference in the Masters?
Remember, Rory had a buffer going into 18, and then he hit that wayward tee shot, and it was like for a brief moment, yep. Like, oh, is he going to do something stupid here? But I think he won by 2, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It just also, like, when you pull out this, since January 1st of 2024, Scottie Scheffler has 18 wins. This collection of golfers have combined for 17 in that time frame. Cam Young, Tommy Fleetwood, Xander Schauffele, mm-hmm. Victor Hovland, Russell Henley, Shane Lowry, Justin Thomas, Ludwig Åberg, Colin Morikawa, Jordan Spieth, Jason Day, Adam Scott, Siwoo Kim, Sam Burns, and Patrick Cantlay. They've combined for 17 in that time. So just replanting his flag. He's been the number one golfer. He is the number one golfer. Didn't quite have the year up to his expectations, but for a down year for him, hell of a season.
Here's Rosales, left-footed in-swinger from the near flag. Two arms up in the air. He approaches, hits it, looking back post. Sermon wins the header, clears away, only as far as Heinz Eich. And eventually a goal. It's Puejeta, or is it Svatak? It's Svatak who scores for Austin. A spill in the box inside the six, and the Timbers give up the goal in second half stoppage time.
Oh, that's breaking the line pick go.
That's Fletcher Johnson on the call here.
That was the Mariners are excited to be playing the Mets moment for him on Friday.
Austin FC is absolute garbage.
Terrible.
And the Timbers lost at home to them?
Yes.
Did you proclaim this was a good, perfect match to get right for the Timbers?
Something like that.
I think some wood was being laid. Wood was laid on Friday. No wood was laid on Saturday.
2-1.
No wood.
Scored one goal.
What the hell happened? New coach? Were we out on him already?
No, you know they.
I was watching football.
Kelsey. Well, one, they're starting right back.
I love that you know what happened when you on Friday proclaimed this was an easy ass whooping coming.
You can't make excuses in the back end of it. You can't turn around and be like, well, this guy's banged up.
I'll go Lincoln Riley on your asses.
We know you will.
They don't have a finisher up top with the deal that they struck for Kelsey to sell him to the Rangers for $13 million, and their starting right back is out for a year. He ripped up his knee a couple of weeks ago.
You didn't consider that on Friday, though, it sounds like.
Shouldn't have mattered against FC Austin. There's no excuses there.
Order up!
Joey, did you do that too? Is this a first baseman thing?
I've never had a nacho in my entire life, guys.
What?
What?
I know. I'm a nacho virgin.
Joey, can we break that virginity today, please?
We'll do it in the concession area for sure.
That's a great bit of commentary. Last night, Sunday Night Baseball, it's really about Pete Crow Armstrong, who's going to be the NL MVP. He's had 5 home runs in his last 2 games. But really, that's a delightful little cut. Reds, Cubs, Sunday Night Baseball, Joey Votto admitting out loud he's never had a nacho.
How?
I don't understand how that's possible.
How is that possible?
Well, he's what, 40, 45 years
he's
old now?
He's 42 years old.
That is
how
shocking.
You have to actively avoid it.
Like, there's never been a time where you've been at a bar with friends and there's been just like, hey, let's order, like, appetizers. Here's a plate. Like, you didn't order the nachos yourself.
He's a baseball player.
But you just grab a chip with some cheese on it and a little bit of salsa, and that counts as a nacho. How have you never done that?
They've never walked into a clubhouse post-game meals, but there's been a nacho buffet?
Yeah, I'm not buying
Come
it.
Come on.
There at one point had to have been a nacho buffet.
Especially, especially in the minor leagues.
Yes.
Are we believing him? I don't want to call him a liar. He's
I don't have
a
any
great
reason.
Personality.
He was right. I mean, he was definitive in it, which leads me to believe yes.
Is there anything like this for you? Any sort of like mainstream kind of food? Like this, I have
no,
this a lot with
mind.
Like movies.
This
I'd be
is,
like, I haven't seen that movie or that show.
For me, it's movies, and it's almost always late 80s, early 90s cult classics that people.
You haven't seen that?
Right.
Thunderdome, dude.
I'm like, no, I'm good.
Yeah, I'm all
right. Some of those movies are really not good. You just think they were good because you were stoned when you watched it.
you were 17, driving your Trans Am over to go see it. That
those
movie
kinds of movies, most of them I have not seen, and I don't really care.
Yeah, that's definitely me, too, the movies
but
from that era.
Meal-wise?
For food, I can't think of anything.
Like, you have to...
Nachos are so mainstream.
And, like, nachos of any kind, like, to say nachos, it runs... You can put... If there's
cheese and chips
and chips,
never once.
Whatever else you put on top of it is still called a nacho.
I think Swag's right. You have to be actively avoiding, not eating it to say you've not eaten a nacho 42 years of your life.
Maybe he's a crazy health nut who never wanted to eat cheese. There has to be a backstory.
Is this a Wade Boggs? I only eat chicken before game sort of thing.
Weird admission.
Order up. That of their final out. Ball game's over, and things could not have gone realistically any worse for the Mariners over the weekend in Toronto. They get swept and shut out today, 7-0 the final score.
By the way, Aaron Goldsmith, the surging Blue Jays, who are having a disappointing season, only a game and a half back now. They swept the M's, who have lost four straight and are now 5 games back of the wild card.
I love the idea that the Toronto Blue Jays are in last place in their division. 15 games out of first place in the AL East. Yeah. And if you put them in the AL West, they're a half game behind the Astros for first place.
They're a game and a half back. We might get all AL East teams in the AL.
I mean, it should be all AL East teams. Their schedules have been harder, and they're all better than anybody else in the entire league. So just let the whole division go to the playoffs. Everybody else go home for the year.
Have the Guardians faded that far in the Central? Because the White
Guardians, they're surging.
They're 3.5 back.
Oh, okay. You're talking about the White Sox.
White Sox are dipping a little bit here lately. So the Mariners did not pick up that momentum from winning the series?
No. They got nothing from going.
Cal Raleigh's still hitting .170 with 19 home runs. Is he back?
Their playoff chances have dipped below 20%. That's pretty brutal.
He had one home run in that series.
They start a series at Fenway today.
Ooh. Well, they just got shellacked by the Yankees.
Well, which means the Red Sox are going to be extra
No,
salty.
It means it's the right team the Mariners should be playing.
It's right place, there's, right time.
There's
right
no
place,
right team time. The Mariners should be playing right now.
Order up. It's a fitting ending as he hustles up to finish off the 24-time major winner.
5-7, 4-6, 6-2, 6-1.
Credit to the big underdog. Unforgettable night for Mariano Nivone. Agonizing night for Novak Djokovic and his many millions of fans.
Yeah, there's Chris Fowler, ESPN. Not much on this other than Novak Djokovic lost in the first round of the U.S. Open yesterday. It's a 4-hour and 36-minute match to a guy you've never heard of. It's the first second round of the U.S. Open since 2003 that there'll be no Djokovic, no Federer, and no Nadal. A stunning upset last night. Djokovic, to his to his credit, but. To defend Djokovic a little bit, he was sick, and he was
puking all over the court.
He was cramping up, all his muscles, his back, his calves.
How alarming is that for the health of men's tennis?
There's
that stat that you just gave me?
Well, there's some. Well, those are dominant generational.
Oh, I know.
Those might be the three.
It feels like we've always gone. It feels like we've always kind of had one, though, haven't we? Like kind of one guy kind of cycles out, and then another one comes up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you've got Sinner and Alcaraz. So the difficulty part has been they've both been off and on injured throughout this
Alcaraz
year.
Alcaraz is just now coming back.
This is his first tournament, I think, since...
I think he's been out... Man, he's been out for a minute.
He's been out for a while. Did he... Because he didn't compete. Did he go out in the French Open or before that?
He didn't mix doubles with Serena in this
game. So Sinner's out because he's injured. So it'll be interesting times.
Order up!
we had some mistakes. We had areas that we had to that we have to clean up. We had to continue to get better. But I thought the guys handled that well. To be able to where it was a close game there in the third quarter. To be able to take control of it and to be able to finish winning by multiple scores. That's something we'll be able to point to, and obviously you compliment the guys for what they were able to do. But obviously there's a lot of things throughout the game that we get to grow and be better from.
To quote Chris Berman, stumbling and mumbling and bumbling there. There's Mike Norvell. He sounds like a Southern gentleman who's lost something. Anytime you hear him talk. He just sounds like he's talking about something that he lost.
Is there a less confident sounding power forehead coach?
I think he's losing his job is what he's losing. He's actively happening on a week by week, day by day basis,
and
man.
We know NC State lost by 31, but I don't know if there's a bigger loser than Florida State struggling with New Mexico State in the most pivotal year for Mike Norvell.
I would say TCU probably a bigger loser this weekend than Florida State just because of the team that they lost to. And everybody loved TCU minus the 8.5 because North Carolina was incompetent last year. And this is a dead program walking, man. I watched about 85% of that game on Saturday. It was one of the later window games.
They know he's cooked.
Dude, their quarterback play, Ashton Daniels, was terrible. They couldn't move the ball. It was 17-10 late in the third quarter, and they were having a really hard time moving the ball. And if New Mexico State hits a trick play and completes it in the end zone, you got a tie game, and that thing's really uncomfortable. And so it's only a matter of when, not if, he's going to get fired, and he knows it.
Alvin now extends the play, gets to Mosley. Mosley into the end zone. Touchdown, Trojans. 14 yards, right corner of the end zone on the crosser. Mosley with his first college career touchdown.
Matt Money Smith, Compass Radio. Jordan Mayava, 14-yard touchdown pass to freshman receiver Trent Mosley. That made it 35-3. USC ended up, we talked about them in hour one, ended up beating San Jose State 42-26.
Nice development. They needed another wide receiver, and he looked awesome on Saturday.
Order up. They'll turn and hand to McGill. Stretching to the left. Cuts up at the 5. Touchdown, Carolina. Jalen McGill hits pay dirt for the first time this season for the Heels and the first time in McGill's career.
And that would be the last touchdown of the game for UNC as they win 15-10.
Happened in the first quarter. Thank you very much. Nobody scored
all the
a touchdown.
Touchdowns happened in the first quarter.
Yep. That was Learfield UNC Radio. They win the Dublin Ireland game. Bill Belichick's back, don't you know?
Here he comes.
He beat mighty TCU.
Sprague shaking in his boots over there. Uh-oh.
Second and two on the third snap of the second half for the Cavaliers. Now the deep shot throw and down there.
Yeah, that is Wes Durham, ESPN. Bo Prebula transferred from Missouri to UVA, who actually ran the living hell out of the ball. But Prebula had 9 passes completed out of 11 attempts for like 155 yards.
Didn't do a ton.
Didn't really need to do a ton. No. UVA rolls over NC State 34-3.
He did hit a couple of nice deep shots. The bigger takeaway for me wasn't necessarily Virginia, was how bad NC State's offense looked. Now, maybe that's Virginia's defense. Maybe they're the 85 Bears this year, but sweet Jesus, NC State could not complete a pass.
What did Pribula rush for? Because he ran it quite a bit,
he ran
too.
A ton, yeah. He got hurt last year. Remember, he had that nasty leg injury in his time at Missouri and then transferred out after one season. And so it's good to see him healthy running around. We'll see if they can become a player in the ACC. They damn near won the conference last year.
And last but not least, Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague wraps it up. He's back.
I'm here to just go day by day work. I'm not here to be given nothing to earn any position that I'm in, whatever that is, whatever my role is, I'm going to earn it. So day by day, just work, grind, get myself to where I need to be at the level that I want to play at, and that's all I can do. Ain't rushing nothing. Like I said, just continue to stack them days and see where we at.
That's Aaron Donald. We knew he was coming back, but he has officially announced he will be returning. He is now with the LA Rams. I can't wait to see where he's at on the depth chart. I wonder where Aaron Donald will be. Will he be backup?
Nothing's been promised to him.
Nothing.
He's going to earn everything.
He's got to earn everything.
I mean, yeah, breaking news, he will earn it. Because the interesting thing for him is that he's got to restart his Hall of Fame clock. He would have gone in first ballot in 2029, so he's got to wait a little bit longer for that. And their odds got a little bit shorter to win the Super Bowl this year.
I'm sure we'll get to the NFL today. Maybe we talk about the 745. It's as loaded a team as maybe we've ever seen.
Yep.
And it's unless they suffer like the most injuries of any team, it really is tough to see how you beat this team. It's okay to say that out loud.
Yes.
Even if it doesn't happen.
Right.
You have to acknowledge,
on
holy
paper,
crap.
Good luck, everybody.
Exactly.
But the NFL often doesn't give us what paper delivers.
There we go. Cafe Day Dirt and Sprague. We do it every day at 7 a.m. Let's roll on with the Dirty Paul. The number 5 team in all the land, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson, is this team. And we'll tell you with our guest coming up next on 105.1 The Fan. Hey, welcome back in. We roll on with the Dirty Poll, number 5 team in all of the land. This one surprised me. I got to admit, there's been some nice surprises along the way of the Dirty Poll.
We're into the top 5, baby. This is it.
Top 5. According to one Andy Dirt Johnson, the number 5 team in all the land going into the season, the Ole Miss Rebels.
The Rebels. Off of last year's semifinal appearance.
I would put on the shocked sports Richter scale.
This is a pretty big one for you?
7.4 for me. This is a pretty big one because I did not see you having them quite that high. I figured they'd be in this.
Sure.
But.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I'm already leery about Monday night of next week, a week from today, because they play, I think it's Monday night, they play the only ranked matchup of week one. They get Louisville in the opening week of the season. And as we know, historically speaking from the Dirty Poll, we've had some rough week ones over the years where a team that we're very high on goes down and bows out right away.
Iowa State's
so
been in this.
Do not worry. My antennas are already up for Louisville next week, knocking off Ole Miss and everybody laughing at this ranking. It comes down to, I think they have the best quarterback in the sport.
You think he's the best one,
I
really?
In terms of NFL stock and all, I don't know. But in terms of impact, like taking over a game at the college level,
yeah.
I wouldn't take anybody over Chambliss this year.
Really?
I would not.
Not even your own guy?
Not even my own. I love my guy. Love my guy. I think he's a better pro prospect, but I wouldn't take him over Chambliss in college this year.
Side note, we get Steven on here in a second.
Yeah.
I saw something on the Big Ten Network yesterday. It was a replay of them visiting Oregon camp, and they had Evan Stewart in between a three-man player thing.
Yeah.
Sitting next to him was Dante, and I don't know if their stools were different sizes, but Dante looks like he could eat Evan Stewart.
He gained some weight this offseason.
But he just looks so much bigger than Evan Stewart.
The afro helps, too. When you got the afro puffed
an
out, afro it just
always
know, looks
make
fantastic, and it makes you look bigger, too.
Speaking of something great, Stephen Willis, our great guest, is going to join us now as Ole Miss is number 5, according to one Andy Dirt Johnson, host of the Locked On Ole Miss podcast. As he notes, two-time brain tumor survivor. And the host of the podcast, the most watched Ole Miss sports podcast, he joins us now on Twitter at the Stephen Willis. Good morning, Stephen. Did you consume a ton of Week Zero, or are you one of those, thanks, no thanks, I don't need to watch garbage football?
Man, I watched FCS football on Thursday. So anything kicking off, I was consuming.
Let's go.
Because this offseason has been way too long for me to judge the quality of football in August.
You know what? I normally would judge you a little bit. I know you're coming from the South and you guys love this at a level that most on the West do not. But what I would say to follow up is I'm not judging you because I'm so sick of conference realignment, NFL players, eligible, no eligible, playoff expansion. Like, I find most of the off-season conversations just so terrible that I can't blame people for fully leaning into being a football sicko and consuming it all.
Yeah, and I'm right in the middle of this NFL thing, and it just needs to stop. And can we just play games? So I'm just enjoying them almost as an escape from the actual real thing that's happening. So.
Yeah. There's no doubt. Idaho Cal Poly was a banger on Friday night. That was a hell of a way to go into the weekend. A little late night Friday, big sky after dark. But let's get to Ole Miss, man. I'm really high on Ole Miss this year. But I'm going to start with the weaknesses. Let's get that out of the way. Because if there's something that derails this prediction in this season for Ole Miss, I would imagine it has to be the offensive line. Correct me if I'm wrong. Both tackles gone to the NFL. The interior did not grade out well, although I think all three starters are returning. Where is the fear that we have this Lamborghini quarterback and this Porsche running back, but we don't have a garage to keep it out of the bad weather and the offensive line kind of foiling their year?
Well, the offensive line, there are concerns. Don't hear me say there's not concerns, but Perez Davis basically instantly won the left tackle job in spring. So there hasn't been a competition. They feel good about that to the point where they're impressed. He's the son of Ricky Davis, who played in the NBA for like 10 years. He's a really athletic guy with good feet, and they're pretty excited about it. The right tackle position, it kind of goes back and forth on. And I assume it's going to be Tommy Kinsler, the transfer from Miami. But there's Kerryous Kearns, the LSU transfer, which would be pretty funny. And there's also a couple of young guys that are coming up. I think that is the concern, especially in week one, by the way.
Right.
A.J. Green and Clev Lubin in Louisville, they're no jokes, and they're going to be going at these tackles all night. So if they're not ready, if I'm wrong, that could be a problem. But we also have to remember this about my boy Trinidad, who graced the Las Vegas Sphere and is going to for the next week, apparently. The offensive line doesn't have to be for him. It just doesn't have to be bad. I mean, it just has to not be bad. Mm-hmm. And if that happens, his athletic ability, and he has put on, I don't know what these quarterbacks are taking in the offseason, but he's put on about 20 pounds of weight, it looks like. And he hasn't lost his speed and his quickness and all that. And it'll be interesting to see. Against Georgia, if you remember that crazy Georgia game that he just took over, in all three of those plays that he took over, Georgia had a free runner at the quarterback.
Yeah.
Trinidad just made a play, got through it. So I'm not overly concerned about the offensive line. I think with Kewon Lacy and Trinidad back in the backfield, that's going to be a big help for them. But that is the weakness. If something happens, if it goes wrong, you could absolutely point to that. And the other thing that you could point to is the fact that Ole Miss has an all-new secondary. Now, they're all former Power Four starters, but they are all new. And so if this is a complex game system, if communication is a problem, they don't quite have that in early in the season, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
Stephen Willis, our guest here, host of the Locked On Old Miss podcast. Dirt has Ole Miss number 5 in his preseason top 12. What did we learn about Pete Golding and from the start of taking over from when Lane snaked out to right up to the lead of this season about to kick off for them in a highly anticipated season? You talk about the Sphere. They have Trinidad Chambliss on that for the Heisman campaign. Like, what have you learned about Pete Golding from day one taking over all the way up until today going into week one of his first full season as the head coach?
Now, just a heads up to everybody listening, it's going to be hard for me not to fanboy in this section because if you look at what Lane Kiffin did and the way it happened, he did not put a foot wrong, especially in the first 3 months. Now, you can say something about the Dabo Luke Ferrelli thing and that one, and okay, if that's the worst thing that happens to him, he's going to have a pretty good coaching career. But he continues to put steps in the right places on every single thing. Spring came out okay. They made it through without injury. Fall camp, the same way so far. Now, the games are going to be, the scoreboard's going to matter, but he is a really good person in the offseason, I guess you can say. He has 2 playoff wins, but he is somebody that handled all of this chaos going on, and it hasn't stopped. There have been bombs coming at Ole Miss from Baton Rouge over the course of the offseason. And, I mean, I expect that. That's the way it's always going to be. But a bad coach and irresponsible coach, something like that, he would have misstepped, and he hasn't done it this season.
Hmm. On that note, and I don't mean to be disrespectful to Ole Miss's history with this question, so please go ahead and throw this back in my face if it is. Is that game against LSU the biggest game in Ole Miss history?
Oh, no. No, it's not. The biggest game in Ole Miss history was the Sugar Bowl in January. Mm-hmm. When playoff quarterfinal, the biggest home game in Ole Miss history was the week before when they played Tulane in the playoffs. Now, as far as the biggest regular season game, and for reasons other than football, yes, I think tickets are going for about $800 get-in price for that game right now.
Damn, dude.
So it is going to be. Now, listen, the fan base have not had their opportunity to let their voices be heard by Lane Kiffin. I mean, this is almost a closure thing for them, a little catharsis for them. So, yes, everybody I know wants to go to that game. Now, me personally, I would not go within 100 miles of Oxford, Mississippi on September 19th. I'm just going to watch it on my 75-inch TV and try and be happy with it. But there are a group of people that will fight you to the death to get into that football game because they want to let voices be heard and let him know how much they didn't appreciate what he did last November and December. Not necessarily that he left. how he left. Right.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I think everybody around the country, you know, sans LSU, was completely with Ole Miss in terms of, like, how all of this is transpiring. And it was pretty cool to watch them go on that playoff run. Last one for me that I want to – number five, I told my co-host before we got you on, I was genuinely shocked. I know Ole Miss is good. I know Chambliss is maybe going to be the Heisman winner. I understand all of this. Number five, I thought that was a bit high. My co-host is really high on Chambliss and thinks he can overcome whatever Ole Miss is lacking. What do you make of him thinking Ole Miss is the fifth best team in the country going into the season?
I think Ole Miss can win the national title this year. I mean, I think you can look at their schedule and you shouldn't be surprised by 12-0. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but I'm saying it's a real option because, listen, this is with all respect to the guy up in Oregon. I think Trinidad Chambliss is the best quarterback in the country. Mm-hmm. Ole Miss has the best running back also in the country. And Ole Miss also has the best kicker in the country. That's three positions that directly affect winning. So if the defense got fixed over the offseason, like we have been told that it has, Power Four starters being brought in, now Ole Miss has been able to spend money on the defense while having the pieces already on the offensive side, that unit is going to be better. So if John David Baker takes a step back offensively, if that just naturally happens, the defense takes three steps forward, it's going to be a better football team. And this is a football team that was 19 seconds away from the national championship game a year ago. So, yeah, I have no problem with anybody putting them number five. I have no problem with somebody putting them at number 12. I wouldn't have a problem with somebody putting them at number one. I think that is the range of where this Ole Miss team should end up.
Yeah, I think that's the health of the sport as well. In the NIL portal era, any team can jump in and more people are in the mix, which I think is a good thing, as broken as it may be in some spots. I think that's why it's a good thing. Stephen Willis, our great guest from the Locked On Ole Miss podcast, does an exceptional job. He's a good friend of the program down there with the preview of Ole Miss as they kick off their season number five on the preseason top 12. Find him on Twitter at TheStephenWillis. Stephen, thanks for hopping on. We appreciate the time, my man.
Thanks, Yoma.
All right, there we go. Stephen Willis on Ole Miss coming in at number five in the Dirty Bowl.
Yeah, they're not going to go undefeated. I'll just say that. I would be pretty shocked if Ole Miss found a way to go undefeated. The schedule outside of Louisville is not super challenging early in the year. They do have that LSU game in September. But you fast forward to the back end of October and November, you got a road game at Texas, you got a road game at Oklahoma, you got Georgia at home. Like, it's going to be a gauntlet towards the back end of the year, and then the last two games are cupcakes against Wofford and Mississippi State. I certainly feel very highly, though, about their quarterback and running back combination, and I think it's going to be good enough to keep them in the mix all season long, and it gives them a legitimate shot to win the SEC this year. If they can keep him upright and he can continue that magic that he found late in the season last year, look out for that Ole Miss offense this year.
We got more football to get into, college and NFL. We'll talk Oregon coming up at the top of the hour. That was Stephen Willis with the number five preview of Ole Miss, who Dirt is very high on, loves Chambliss, and we'll have to wait and see their first game against Louisville this weekend as week one is here in college football. We're back with more on 105.1 The Fan. All right, we'll get to Oregon coming up at the top of the 8 a.m. hour, as Dirt has me looking up Caleb Williams jersey reveal AI videos, and they are beyond disturbing.
He's a flexible guy, man.
Why are people doing this?
I don't know. There's got to be a better use for AI, does there not? No?
I think humans are kind of proving there is not a better use for AI than what we're doing.
Got to have those
AI
data centers, though, so I can make sure Caleb Williams puts his butt up in the air with a new Bears uniform on.
That's what you need. You need him being comped to Ice Spice.
Yes.
That's what I need.
What is the internet going to be if I don't have that ability on AI? How will I survive?
This AI video has Caleb in the new Bears uniform stand off a chair, stand up in his shoulder pads, his uniform, bend over to touch his toes, and then it turns into Ice Spice shaking her ass. And that is like, that's a beyond disturbing, and the internet should not be doing this.
It's getting a little freaky.
What are we doing?
We don't kink shame here. You do what you got to do, boo.
I got to it earlier, and I really want to have a little bit of an NFL conversation. I know we'll get to more NFL. There were camp cuts, and certain guys were left off. I didn't think there was anybody shocking. There was a lot of intel that it might be J.J. McCarthy. But he's going to make the Vikings at least at this go-round.
That did not happen. He did not get cut.
Aaron Donald, who we all knew was going to return to the Rams, it was like this weird, we can't guarantee anything, but it's going to happen because he's clearly ramping up for it.
Right.
I'm not kidding, man, and I'm not saying like it's going to be my pick per se, But I'm a fan of a team in the division, and I've seeded that it's Seahawks or Rams that are going to win that division. If my team wins that division, I will be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I'd be pretty surprised if it was not either of those teams.
This isn't, to me, this is not the Eagles' dream team. This is legitimately, on paper, the most complete team I think we've seen. It's so terrifying to look at what they are roster-wise.
They're elite at so many different levels.
And try to find the weakness. I mean, they're going to have weaknesses, right? Every NFL team does.
But last year it was their defense, and they added Myles Garrett, Aaron Donald, and Trent McDuffie in the offseason.
And maybe it's Stafford's back is the weakness, right? With the age and the injury history. Like
spinal!
Damn, dude. This is just such a loaded team, and now they're adding the greatest defensive tackle in NFL history.
For those who don't want the Rams to win the Super Bowl, because I tend to agree with your line of thinking, like, it's just hard. This time of year, until we see them play or injuries happen, like, it's just really hard to see somebody beating them. They were damn close last year. They got better in the offseason. They are now, after the Aaron Donald signing, this is according to different sports books, they are now at plus 500 odds to win the Super Bowl, okay? In the last 30 years, do you know how many times we have had a team with 500 odds or better to win the Super Bowl? In the last 30 years. So we either a plus 500 favorite or better. It's much larger than that. 20 times has happened.
I was way short.
There's been a team with plus 500 or better odds to win the championship. Do you know what those 20 teams are? 0-20. It's actually kind of funny to go back and look at the list, some of the odds.
Rattle off a few of them.
It goes all the way back to 1996, 49ers plus 250, didn't win. Packers.
They were defending champions that year, right?
I believe that would have been 95 Super Bowl, 96 season. Packers back-to-back years, 97, 98 plus 250, didn't win. Vikings in 99 plus 450, didn't win. Rams greatest show on turf 2000 plus 300, didn't win. Rams again in 01 and 02 plus 400 plus 350. The Eagles in 04 plus 500.
Yeah.
I mean, you just keep going on. More recently, it was the Chiefs in 2024 plus 500, the Chiefs in 2021 plus 450, the Chiefs in 2020 plus 450, and then you go back to a couple New England teams. Locally speaking, Seattle was it twice, 14 and 15. They were plus. They have better odds in 14 and 15 than the Rams do this year, and obviously didn't win the championship that year. So this would be something that would buck the trend, the heavy, heavy favorite coming out of preseason with 500 or better odds is 0-20 in the last 30 years.
You know, in a weird way, though, like I kind of think you're also proving my point with this stat. Like it's an important stat to throw out that they're 0-30?
0-20 in the last 30 years.
In the last 30 years.
It has no bearing on this season whatsoever.
But what did I notice when you rattled off all those teams? Conference championship or in-loss Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like Vikings.
Teams that were close.
Vikings
almost
were coming off the 98 season. I forget what they did in 99.
Yeah.
But the Rams, the Packers losing to the Broncos as 14-point favorites in the 98 Super Bowl.
Heavy favorites. Yep.
The Niners had just, like, you're not naming teams that fell off cliffs. You're naming teams that largely.
No, they were good.
Lost. And by the way, the Chiefs being in that a few times is just simply
Patrick Mahomes.
Injuries.
Yeah. And the odds going into the year was mainly Patrick Mahomes.
Offensive line problem against the Bucs and the Eagles fell short. The Seahawks are a yard and a half away from a Super Bowl. Like, you're not naming teams that
cratered.
Missed the playoffs or lost in the wild card. They got to the Final Four or the championship.
I'm sure there's a few in there maybe if you look it up. But yes, largely the point is correct. The funniest year in here is 2005.
Uh-huh.
Three different teams had plus 500 odds. They were all three favorites, but I guess.
Yeah.
Indy with Peyton Manning, New England with Brady, and Philly. All three of them plus 500. None of them won the Super Bowl in 2005.
What was the conference championship games in 2005? I'd be very curious to find out if all three of them made it or if only two or one made it.
I'd be willing to guess either Brady or Manning was in it in the
AFC.
Brady and
Manning every year was in the running for that.
Right, you would think. Let me see. That was the Steelers and Seahawks Super Bowl.
Okay.
Did you know Jerome Bettis is from
Detroit?
Detroit.
Yeah.
So
is the ref.
Yes, playoffs! Here we go.
By the way, so is a Seahawk owner now.
Your playoff bracket, your NFC title game was Seahawks trouncing Carolina.
Carolina, yep. That was Jake Dahomey?
Dahomey, I think. And then the AFC title game was Pittsburgh beating up on Denver.
Okay, so none of the three teams.
Indy lost to Pittsburgh, and New England lost to Denver in the division round of the playoffs.
Was that the Indy? The Eagles didn't make the playoffs. Tripped him with the shoelace game?
Ooh, could have been 21-18. Yes,
Would
have been the 100-yard return for a touchdown.
But he tripped
and
him.
He got. He saved the touchdown.
Roethlisberger on the ground tripped the
pull.
Guy.
That's a good pull.
So they were really close to doing it. My whole thing is like,
yes,
I know what the NFL is. I love it. I watch it every year. I'm going in with optimism. Nothing is a given. Holy crap. That team is electrifying on paper.
Yep.
And we know how good they were last year.
Yep. And we get to see them right out of the gate on a Thursday night in Australia. They're showing up 24 hours before kickoff.
Yeah. And the Niners are getting, I think
they're
the
like there,
are there
now.
Yeah.
They're hanging out for a month.
It's fascinating the strategy between
very,
those.
Is it not?
I also don't know if I have a takeaway opinion if the Niners lose to the Rams because I think the Rams are better than the Niners.
Yeah, it's not even necessarily a travel thing. I just find the way teams handle that fascinating. Like, I get both sides of it. On the one hand, the return trip won't hurt you as much, I would imagine, if you're not there as long. But getting there one day before the game and then playing a game in a weird time.
Well, dude, it's here, man. The NFL is
going to be next week.
It's going to kick off next
week. Week from Wednesday. We get our first game of the year.
When are we doing our picks?
We'll do them early next week.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah, next week. Yeah. Noodle, we got time.
All right.
Let's wait. Final injuries, cuts, you know, all injury, right. All that stuff.
Aaron Donald is back. The Rams continue to be loaded. All right, we got a loaded third hour of the radio program and a fourth. We're going to kick it off. Oregon kicks off this weekend against Boise State. Let's talk some Oregon football. Hour 3 on 105.1 The Fan.